You are listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
This episode of Minookmee contains discussions and depictions of residential schools, including sexual, emotional, physical, and spiritual abuse and abduction. Please take care of yourselves and your community. Chi Mi Wedge. Welcome back to Minookmee. I'm your host, Caitlin Terrell. We are back at it again, continuing our conversation with Tegan Smallwood and continuing our deep dive into their TCTE short fiction contest winning piece, Passion of Christ. Now, first of all, I want to thank all of you who were able to tune in last week, especially for, you know, the heavy topics and, you know, the visceral depictions that I given in my piece at the end of this episode, and that is going to continue here at the end. And despite the fact that necessarily in this story there's a happy ending, the ending is also very ambiguous in its happiness, and we don't really know what sense of freedom that person is going to get and what necessarily that means. And yeah, I just want to thank all of you for, you know, I guess braving through that and, you know, finding, I guess, the beauty in making things like that. And I want to, you know, thank all of you that see that and understand all of you that maybe don't. I completely do. That's kind of why I was a bit on the fence about sharing that in this show. But, you know, when I think back to when Tegan was writing that, I feel like it, once again, I mean, I said this in our conversation, I'm sure I'm going to say it again in the rest of our conversation that we had. I understand how that was a response to anger, intergenerational anger, and how a piece like this is, in a sense, taking the reins in a creative way, in a way that gives you agency that may not be, you know, material, may not be, can't hold it in your hands, that power. But I mean, the fire that piece gave Tegan and what that then ballooned into with their other projects. I mean, I can talk about their work for like ever, but once again, I say this also as an artist myself and also as someone that, you know, I've been wanting to work in education for a good portion of my life. I've recently been more steering towards wanting to be an Indigenous student coordinator with any school board that is willing to take me. But I think there's something really important with youth and the arts, and it's something that we need to keep, especially arts as a hobby, not arts as a skill, or arts as like, this is my thing that I do, this is my identity. Art is simply a human behavior, guys. Art is a human behavior. Everyone was able to sing. Everyone was able to dance. Everyone was able to draw. Because that was just how our societies functioned. But, you know, capitalism had other plans. You know, I think maybe for, in the sense of music, I'm glad about how many limitations there actually isn't in producing your own music and letting your music be seen. I mean, I remember like back in high school, like sending all my little like iPod touch recordings of all my little folk songs I wrote and posting them on my SoundCloud before like the free version of like song limits ended. And like, that's how people heard my stuff and I didn't have to pay a penny. But I think about this now, and I'm, like, branching into so many different topics because, like, girl, I'm a passionate woman on these things. In a lot of ways, it's kind of, these all kind of overlap with one another. I mean, the lack of access that we have within arts industries in this country is, especially in this city, is, it's something that is damaging to a whole industry and a whole community and a whole generation. I mean, you know, I can think about, when I usually think about these kind of things, I think about it in sort of a selfish sense of like, I could have got that. We could have got that. I could have been this by now. But no, at the end of the day, I think showing pieces like Tegan's and showing how, and discussing how the sort of support that a youth gets in their unwavering artistic expression is extremely powerful and extremely beneficial to filling up their gasoline tank with a lot more artistic power for their adulthood. And that in itself is even more powerful. I mean, or not in many different senses, LOL. But with as much artistic power that young people have, especially now with a lot of access we are given through technology, even though technology is evil at the end of the day, I say as I talk inside of my brand new MacBook, when they're not given that support to then engage with their artistic pursuits in a more professional or a more community-based and more wider scale as an adult, I feel like that's very damaging. And I feel like it then forces children to then run into scarier things like capitalism. And we're already 6.5 minutes in. I could go for longer, but I don't want to keep you guys because I want to keep this conversation in with Tegan. And I guess my song, my soiree to bring us back is this one track that I saw. It's called Indian Time by the band Spirit Trail, and I hope you all enjoy.
Living on Indian time, picking medicine. to the skies. True love never dies. Taking our time, it's all right.
Manitoba, and Cass, who is Canadian, from Windsor, Ontario. They're currently located in Treaty 3, I believe, and they have tracks also titled Never Again, Lest We Forget, and they have an album as well out called Pieces Up to You, Free Palestine. This track I found in the CGSF directory when I was looking for Indigenous artists, contemporary Indigenous artists, and yeah, I love this little duo. It's great music, great sound. I love their voices together. I love, like, that mix. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Leanne Simpson's track Surface Tension from our first episode. I just love, like, the slow, the sway. I really like that tempo. I need to be more comfortable with writing slower tempos. But yeah. Really cool duo between an Indigenous person and like a white settler Canadian. Also love that Ontario representation also. Never been to Windsor though, but I should soon. With that, I think we're back on with Tegan, and I hope you enjoy. Something in this story that really is kind of like a focus for this discussion, I think, something that I found very powerful about this story from the beginning to this day when I was talking to my classmates about it when I was presenting this work in this class, is the aspect of revenge and the way revenge is used in this story as a sort of like, girl, they're trying to sweep this whole piece of history under the rug right now. Like, who knows if this happened in schools? I'm sure there was instances in which this has happened. I mean, I've seen other media portraying students taking revenge and fighting back against their... I remember there was, like, sadly a clip that I only ever saw on Instagram Reels or TikTok. That was of the girl that was at residential school and the nun was, like, kept, like, hitting her. And then she, like, beat the fuck out of her, and, like, she was dead, and then she runs away. And I remember, like, being like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But that I saw way later, and when I was much older, and when I had, I mean, of course we had, I mean, we knew enough back when we were at that age, but I feel like I had a more mature view as I was interacting with that topic as an adult, sort of, I guess, out of school of that age. At what point, developing this story, Passion of Christ, about Felix going to the school, wanting to make a story through an Indigenous lens, talking about an Indigenous piece of history, horrific piece of Indigenous history, at what point of this process did you add that element of revenge? Was it added later? Was that the prompt? Was this plot coming from a certain feeling, a certain belief, a certain thing? And I guess on top of that, I have another question. that came up a lot in this story, but I was wondering what you think about this. What would you say is the difference between reclamation and revenge? So you can approach that the easiest way that you can. that two-parter.
No, that's interesting. That's interesting. I feel like without like looking at the literal definitions of both words, I feel like to me, like there is a level of like, how do I explain it? Like maybe spite involved in revenge. Whereas I feel like reclamation stems from, like, it feels like it's a different energy in terms of like we want to, this thing happened, whatever this like thing was, but we want to move forward from it. And I feel like reclamation, comes with almost more of a like, taking back your power, if you will. And whereas revenge, I think, is more so rooted in it almost feels like reclamation is for, how am I explaining this? Hold on. I feel like reclamation is more so for like recognizing the, or wishing for the good and like walking, moving towards the good in something and trying to rebuild. Whereas revenge feels more, yeah, like, I guess like spiteful or kind of like, I don't know, targeted or like, less resolved. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like they can probably like coexist to some degree, but I think revenge is like a bit more, I don't know. It just feels more like menacing.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, I think I would interpret the story that his act of revenge was his reclamation.
True.
On the topic of that.
Oh,
that was the difference. The difference between, that was the second part.
What was the whole first part? The whole first question?
When did you, sorry. Yes.
No, that's okay.
When in the process did you decide for the plot to have revenge in it?
Yeah, I feel like, if I remember correctly, I feel like I built, like that was the, I kind of first built that narrative of this, like, that it was going to be, someone who is being abused at the hands of the priest or what have you, like a figure of power, and that the kind of arc was going to be that he eventually was going to like murder the person. I think that was always from the get-go my like that was the storyline, and then it was like filling in the rest and like actually making it a full story. But I think that was like always in my head of just a very like very potent scene. And I was like, it felt like when I was kind of just like digesting different Indigenous media, it felt like a scene that I hadn't digest before, like that you didn't really see a victim like get their revenge and get that like feel that clarity maybe, or you know. So I feel like it kind of was, that scene was built first, and then I built the rest of the story around it.
All right, guys, our second music break is gonna be Tiger at the Drugstore by Skating Polly.
Scientist, psychiatrist is sewing me back. It's not the same.
Standing up against racism is an ongoing battle. How will you help?
Teach my children about systemic racism and about historic and persistent colonialism and the responsibility that comes with their privilege. I will use my voice to speak up, and I will make more space at the table.
I will continue to educate myself and others in my community about the racism and inequities faced by BIPOC.
We will not be silent and idle.
This message is brought to you by the Canadian Anti-Racism Youth Coalition. Visit caryc.ca for more information about how you can stand up and speak out.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. Simon Fraser University, the 1960s. In the earliest days of SFU, a renegade, unlicensed radio station begins broadcasting around campus. 1974. Volunteers establish the Simon Fraser Campus Radio Society, which operates CJSF to this day. 1985. The station obtains a cable license, bringing CJSF to a wider audience. And we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.
Yeah, I think I remember that because I swear the art that we made back then, I feel like had a weird sense of gutsiness because we knew we were, at least it felt like we were the only Native people in that space. So I feel like we took, I may be saying this wrong, but I feel like in a way we took that sense of tokenism and used it to our own advantage a lot of time through our art. I feel like And I mean, it kind of does sound kind of like cheapening being like us being like, we're the only Native ones at this school. You got to watch our stuff or you're evil. But I feel like with the amount of guts that you particularly introduced into your work at that time, I feel like that really shook up the atmosphere of the conversations. At least by the teachers, because at least I knew the teachers were paying attention. Because I just remember, like, I would get so inspired, like, on my bus rides home. And, I mean, I'm a teenager. All my inspiration comes from very strong emotion. And a lot of those emotions, a lot of the time when I'd be sitting on the 26 DuPont bus, listening to my Buffy St. Marie, not knowing that she was Italian the entire time. Sorry to my dad that disagrees. And, you know, feeling this immense amount of anger, especially, you know, meaning you and being more conscious about certain things, being more conscious about my place in that school as, you know, a minority that doesn't read as such, but lives as such. And that snippiness, I feel like that's what made it so, like, I even remember, like, showing this piece to my teacher when I was bringing it to him to tell him that this was what piece of writing that I was going to do my final project on. And I remember, especially because, like, of course, Roseville had, not to name the school, they had a very, like I said before, like, I was very lucky to have the very first experience of feeling like a teacher was working with me and working with me on my project and what I want to do. And they're bouncing off me in that way in academic and professional, in a sense, settings creatively. I think, like, when I was showed it to my teacher, he, because I guess now I'm an adult, he just kind of literally raised his hands in the air and said, "You got it." He was like, "You got it. I don't think I should or do have anything to really add." But I think he said, "That sounds great. Wow, and good luck." So that really just shows exactly what we're going to be treating everyone to when at the end of this episode and the next episode. On that same topic, and I think this really, I'm very excited for your answer because I feel like this really shines on a lot of your work, especially because what I love about your work is that since we're such a art-centric radio show, I in your art, what I find very satisfying is how blunt you are, of course, as I said, through the story. But also because you put a lot of your own lenses into everything you do, and very unabashedly. And you don't like to just you don't hide it or in flowery language, overly unnecessary flowery language. You don't abstract anything. You serve things. You remind me a lot about Jeanette McCurdy's writing style. Actually, Jeanette McCurdy reminds me of your writing style because I did read your stuff first. How it's very blunt, because it almost seems in a sense patronizing, or I guess a bit rude to the reader to serve them up all these complicated words for someone that just feels tired. And when they feel a certain sense of emotion that gives them such blunt and to the point and kind of bleak language. And I feel you also have very beautiful language as well, but I feel like that really shines through in your work. And I wanted to know, because I feel like your work does this each time that you create, but what does reclamation mean for you as an artist?
I feel like it means kind of telling the stories that aren't always told.